Border Patrol agent, if I remember correctly. I told him if I get all these details wrong, he can correct me. And also at one time served as an elder in the church there in Del Rio. And that was before a tragic boating accident in 1986 that took two of our brothers in Christ on the Rio Grande River. Since that time, Brother Burke has devoted his time to mastering the language of Spanish so that he can preach among Spanish brethren. He and his wife Dana and their children have done local work in the Virgin Islands and also in Puerto Rico. And they have also done short-term mission work in Chile, Barbados, Dominican Republic, and several other places. And he has also devoted a great deal of his time to writing gospel sermons and lessons in the language of Spanish. And it's our pleasure to have him here for the day. We are considering the possibility of entering into fellowship with him. And he's going to preach for us this morning and this afternoon, talk about the work that he has done among the Spanish-speaking brethren and also English-speaking brethren in various places. I'm looking forward to that and encourage you to come back and be with us today. I want to apologize for the annoying message that continues to come up on the screen. Just have to deal with it. And as some of you guys that know a little more about computers, I've tried to get that message to go away and it won't. So anybody knows how to repair that sometime between now and the afternoon service, I'd appreciate that. Anyway, just have to deal with it and realize that your preacher is somewhat illiterate in those regards. Anyway, at this time, turn the service over to Brother Burke.
Good morning, brethren. It's good to be with you. My wife is better, much better. But it is a process of time. And when she gets like this, it just takes several days and so on for her to ultimately get better. I want you to turn to Colossians chapter 1. And if you would, we're going to begin, actually we're just going to read verse 10 there and use it kind of as a beginning point in the lesson this morning. Colossians chapter 1 there at verse 10. It says that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Being fruitful in every good work. And that's what we want to talk about today, is being fruitful in every good work. And as we do that, as we think about that, we think about, first of all, what does it mean to bear fruit? That word is used, that phrase is used in a number of different senses. So we want to talk about that first of all. And then we want to talk about every good work. And not in the sense of what is a good work for the church, but what about you and I as Christians, as individual Christians? When we talk about what does it mean to bear fruit, I think one of the things that we all think about, and probably this is the first thing, is that we think of saving the lost, of bearing fruit in that sense. And certainly that is fruit, that is, we're bearing fruit for the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 11, there at verse 30, the fruit, it says, of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. So yes, that's bearing fruit for the Lord. A very important part. But you say, but you know, I've never found anyone. Does that mean I'm not bearing fruit for the Lord? Well, not necessarily. Because also we talk about the fruits of the Spirit. And I think, again, most of us are very familiar with the passage in Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. Where things there that are described as the fruits of the Spirit. And I'm sure you've already heard, someone's already said, that the idea of fruit is something that grows over time. The works of the flesh are things that happen right now. But fruit, on the other hand, you plant a tree, you plant a plant, whatever it is, and then it bears fruit over time. In the same way, we as Christians need to be bearing fruit. And some of these things, these attitudes, these characteristics are the fruit as well. What about growing in our knowledge of God, of growing in our knowledge of His will? Again, I think certainly that is also bearing fruit for Him. In the book of Philippians, chapter 1 as well, Paul says, "In this I pray that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ, to the glory and praise of God." So again, the idea here of knowledge and fruit being connected. And then I think finally, the one that we also typically think of. In John chapter 15, Jesus says, "I'm the vine and you are the branches." And He goes on to say, "He that's in me will, and if he remains in me, will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." So also the idea of building a personal relationship with Christ is described as bearing fruit. So when we look at all these, we look at these and we say, okay, but which one of these is bearing fruit? And brethren, I think the answer is pretty clear that actually it's all of these. All of these are bearing fruit. Bearing fruit for the Lord means I have to change. And we as human beings don't like to change, do we? We're the way we are because we have decided, we have justified that this is okay. This is the best way for me. And we may look around and we may think, well, other people are doing this and I don't or I can't or whatever. That is not really the point. But we are where we are because of what we have decided. But bearing fruit means changing me. Me becoming more and more what God wants me to be. Overcoming the thing. Going on, bearing fruit. And so as Colossians here says, being fruitful in every good work. Now, again, when we think about good works, we think about a lot of different things. And we may think about membership in some organization. Whether it's the Red Cross, whether it's the Kiwanis, the Lions Club, whoever it may be, we may think, well, that's a good work. And certainly most of these organizations, if not all of them, we're going to hope all of them, do some good thing. They do good works. And being a member of them, you're part of that. What about group volunteer work? And again, this is something that it does good. This is something that produces good for the community. If it's just the neighbors getting together and cleaning up the neighborhood, whatever it may be, that's a good work. What about charity in the world? And I think these kinds of things are always on our mind because of the different things that are going on in different parts of the world. Right now, everybody's attention is focused on Somalia and the famine there. And I think correctly so. It's a very tragic situation. One of Dana's nurses in the hospital is from that area of Somalia. And they had something on the news, I think it was the day before yesterday, while she was in there and she says to Dana, "That's my country." And then in a minute, Dana looked and she went and she shut the door and she's over at the sink, you know, doing something. And Dana realized she was crying because she had just gotten word the day before that whether her sister-in-law had died in childbirth. The father is already dead. Her husband's dead already. She died leaving six young children. And she says, and the thing that is so tragic is there's not a thing we can do about it. You can't send money because even if she gets it, there's nothing to buy. And the aid that is sent, very little of it reaches. A very tragic situation. And so when we see these kind of things, we want to do something. And again, that's a good work. What about going and preaching in other countries or teaching? This is a picture from a vacation Bible school that we did about 4 years, 4 or 5 years ago in Dominica. And again, that's a good work. And as you look at these things, I think many times we look at these and we think, well, which of these? Well, again, all of those are good works. But brethren, I think then when we look at it, we think, but what can I do? What is it that I can do? And you know, sometimes we think and realize some of these things are beyond us. You can't imagine the number of people that I have talked to that have told me, I want to go with you. I want to go to help with vacation Bible school. I want to go here to preach or whatever. Every year, I take several young men with me to the Dominican Republic. But we usually start out with 5, 6, or 7 that are going. And when it actually comes down to the date, if there's 3, it's good. Because we want to do that. We know we should do that. But there's one of two problems. Time or money. And most of us don't have both of them, do we? If we have the time, we don't have the money. If we have the money, we may not have the time. And when you look at these kinds of things, and again, when we think of good works, we think of big things. We think of things that will have make a big impact. And that's good. But unfortunately, most of us can't do that. And you remember the Nike commercial, I think, probably somebody will correct me a little later, that said, don't sweat the small stuff. And I want to suggest that when we're talking about good works, we do need to sweat the small stuff. Because the small stuff are things that we can all do. And they have their impact. This passage here in Mark, and this is not only in Mark's gospel, but I think this is probably the clearest. Jesus says very clearly, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink in my name, because you belong to Christ, assuredly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward. Now I ask a question. Of everyone in this room here who's over the age of 5 years old, who cannot give someone a glass of water, a cup of water? And there may be some even under the age of 5, but you get my point. That's something we can all do. And what does Jesus say? If you do that, you won't lose your reward. Brothers and sisters, there's a lot of small things we can do. And I want us to think about some of those small things today. If you remember in the book of Acts, and if you'll turn over there to Acts chapter 9. There's a woman there mentioned in Acts chapter 9, beginning at verse 36. It says, at Joppa there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent 2 men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. Now, why did they send for Peter? It's not stated, but I think it's pretty obvious. She dies, then they send for Peter. And it goes on to say, verse 39, Peter arose, went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room. And all the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. Now you remember that Peter goes on to raise her from the dead. Why did they do this? What is it that's said of Dorcas? Is it said what a great Bible teacher she was? Although she may have been. Is it stated that she had taught many children's classes? No. It's stated that she had done many good works, showing the tunics and the clothing that she had made for them. Now, there was a time you could say, what sister can't sew clothes? Well, that's probably not the case as much as it used to be. And we're not even going to go there. But I think the point that is made is that Dorcas was a woman who did the small things. Again, we're not told that she gave large sums of money. It doesn't say she gave much alms. It said she did many alms deeds. She did what she could. She did help with clothing. She probably took food. She did the things that she could do. And we might say these are small things, but brethren, they were important things. So important that they sent to Peter to bring him, to raise her from the dead. There's a sister we know. She and her husband are very well off. And they lack nothing. Crystal, china, they've got all that. Silverware, matching the whole nine yards. She can set a beautiful table. But her husband serves as an elder in one of the churches in Kentucky. And when they invite young couples over, she doesn't put out the silver and the china. She doesn't use the crystal. They have them over typically on Sunday night. And what she serves is hot dogs that she's wrapped in foil and had in the oven. So when they come home, they're warm. And she brings the hot dogs out. She puts the ketchup bottle on the table, the relish bottle on the table. She serves soft drinks, 2-liter bottle. It's all paper plates, plastic cups, plastic forks, and so on. And when it comes time for dessert, now here she goes all out. She does have Oreos. She doesn't have those Recreos or one of those, you know, knockoff brands. She has the Oreos. But she just opens the package and puts it on the table. Why does she do that? Because she can't do any better? No. No. But because she wants to make the point. The important thing about hospitality is time spent together. The important thing is not the meal. It's not the setting. And again, there's nothing wrong with setting a pretty table. But the point that she wants them to see is it doesn't matter what you have. It doesn't matter what you don't have. You put out the best you have, and the time spent together is the important things. As George will, I'm sure, has told you, people in other parts of the world don't have the things that we have. And I have been to some homes that are less than ideal. And you know, I'm one of those preachers who just likes to drop in. And people will tell me, "Oh, Brother Burke, my house is not clean. Oh, it's, you know," and I say, "I didn't come to see your house. I came to see you." Because that's what's important. And again, who cannot boil water and have put the instant coffee on the table? We can all do that. We have some very dear friends that he, when we knew them, he was a doctor. But he hadn't been a doctor very long. And they were still paying off all their school loans. And their apartment was downstairs, and it wasn't very big. They had 2 little boys at that time, later had a third one. And the living room / dining room, if you want to call it that, was so small that the table, and it wasn't a big table, it was just an ordinary table, they had to push it up against the wall. And when, you know, it's just the two of them and the 2 little boys in high chairs, that's no big deal. But then you invite the preacher, the visiting preacher from a gospel meeting. And then you invite Dana and I. And if his wife is there, you invite her too. But the first time we went, it was just Dana and I and the preacher, the visiting preacher. And she had us over. And a lot of people said, oh, well, there's just no room. And she was a little, I don't know that embarrassed is the word, probably a little bit. But, you know, she'd already fed the boys before we got there. So they were playing in their room. And there's a place for three chairs at the table. And so she says to Dana, we're just going to sit at, I'll think of it in a minute. Those tables, you know, the little tables that you put up at the TV trays, okay? We're just going to eat on the couch with TV trays if that's all right. And that's what she did for a number of years because that's what they had. Now the Lord has blessed them. They've built their dream house now and they have plenty of room for more than five people. But they didn't always. And yet they were willing to do it. Yes, brethren, we can do it. We can go ahead and do that. Now, this is the one my wife loves. Get those manicures, ladies. And yes, guys, get the haircuts as well. Okay? The haircuts are a necessity. Manicures, well, you know, we might dispute that. But Dana has converted two of her manicurists. And the third one, I really think the only reason she didn't is she didn't have time. Because as it happened, her grandfather is a gospel preacher. And I think they would have eventually. But that's a time. And again, this is not something I'm that knowledgeable about. But she says, here you are sitting across from this person for an hour or 2 hours. And it's just the two of you. And especially if you're doing it at somebody without somebody out of their home, there's nothing else going on. And the first one has been responsible for probably 10 or 12 other people obeying the gospel. Because Dana took advantage of that time to talk to her about the Bible. And she was a woman who was already going to a church. She was a woman who was religious. She was so religious as a child, they would break into the church next door so they could play church. Now that's how far back it goes. Do sweat the small stuff. Do think about something that used to be so common and yet in this world has gotten lost. Sunday dinner. And brethren, that again is an important thing, can be a very important thing. It doesn't have to be a big deal, but it can be so important. The brother who took the truth on institutions to St. Croix was going to one of the preaching schools in Dallas. And one Sunday morning, and you have to understand Caribbean people, one Sunday morning they are running so late that they're not even going to make it for Bible class. And that's, you know, that's the way it is. And as they're going down the road, they come to Church of Christ, and he says, look, buddy, here's a Church of Christ. Let's just go here today. And they go in. It's him, his wife, their six children. Afterwards, he's looking through the tracts. He finds one about institutions and he's reading it. And he doesn't know what to make of this. One of the elders comes up to him and says, you know, introduces himself. I'm so and so. You are, blah, blah, blah. They begin to talk. He says, do you have any questions? He said, yeah. I've never heard this before. I don't understand this. Now, this elder at that time is about my age, mid-50s. It's just him and his wife at home. I don't know what they were planning to eat on Sunday afternoon, but he invites 8 more people to eat with him. And I don't know what she threw together, but I know she had to scramble. And that was the beginning. And Angel Cruz ultimately learned and accepted and has done a great deal of good because somebody invited him over for Sunday lunch to teach him. And I think about occasions when we've been there, how important it is, those kinds of occasions. We used to live in Sweetwater in West Texas. And if you're familiar with the churches in West Texas, you know, from Sweetwater to Abilene, that's the close one. It's only 45 minutes. So if you're going to go to gospel meetings, you're going to ride an hour. We used to go to Ranger, an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on the traffic. And what we would do is in our Suburban, we have 3 kids, and in the Suburban we had songbooks. And as we were going down the road, we would sing. And we'd just go around and everybody would pick a song. I would lead and drive and so on. But I mean, that's what we did. That wasted time, because obviously this was long before the DVD players and so on and so forth. That wasted time we put to that use. To encourage them. And our kids still talk about that. And our baby's 29 and has 3 kids of his own. But that little thing meant so much to them. And brothers and sisters, that's what I want us to think about, is those little things that we all can do. We think about, and I think oftentimes too much, think about what we can't do. But what's more important is what can I do. And I want to kind of leave you with one thought. And I want you to just ask yourself, because I think most of us are doing something for the Lord. I want you to ask yourself, is the work that I have chosen to do for the Lord, the work that the Lord has chosen for me, or is it what I have chosen? Is there something that you have been confronted with, something that you have seen a great need for, but you know it would really push you, maybe beyond what you think you can do? That may be what the Lord has chosen for you. Are you going to accept it? Are you going to just say, Lord, this is what I'm going to do for you? We all have works to do. There are things that we can do. And I want you to think about, what can I do for the Lord? Because indeed, that's what it's all about, is what can I do, not what I can't do. And I think you may remember the passage where the point is made that the Lord does not expect what we cannot do, but rather what we can do, whether it's big or whether it's little. Because there is coming a day, and as the song we're about to sing reminds us, there is a home on the other side. There is a place that is described as that which is life indeed. Are you ready for that place? Are you prepared to meet God? If you've not begun as a Christian, you're not prepared. And you may be involved in good works, and that's good. People benefit, that's always good. But you have to become part of the team before you can enter the race. Are you ready to enter the race? The brethren here are ready to help you. We're here to encourage you to do that. Have you begun the race and you've not followed through? Have you gotten off on the sideline at some point? Then know that you can begin again. The Lord allows U-turns. The Lord allows and calls us back. As Revelation chapter 3 says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any will open to me, I'll come in and eat with him." He's ready. He's waiting. Everything on his part's been done. Now it's up to you. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, let us know as we stand and sing that song.